So, we've read all of these old articles about radio pedagogy. Some inspiring, some problematic, some a little bit of both. What have we taken away? How can this history inspire our teaching today?
I, for one, am inspired by how many teachers didn't solely try to replicate traditional school genres in audio media. They had students writing in the popular radio genres to which they were already listening. Now, if I can critique Bernice Orndorff for pushing her own narrow version of the good, the beautiful, the true, then maybe I should resist my own tendency to use audio composing assignments as a trick to voice my NPR aesthetic preferences on students. I think it's better to begin an audio composing assignment by asking students to share and analyze audio genres they find compelling, and then compose in those genres.
Right on. Another thing that strikes me is how many 1930s teachers approached radio production as a way of teaching collaborative writing. I've tended to do more individual audio composing projects in my classes, but I'm increasingly realizing how audio composing can offer great opportunities for collaboration.
Agreed. And I also like how so many of the articles emphasize students sharing their audio texts with audiences beyond the teacher, whether on the airwaves or in a public school assembly. We need to encourage students to use social media strategically to circulate their digital audio texts to wider audiences. We need to make more space and time in our classrooms and broader institutions for public performances of student audio work.
Absolutely. I think, too, this history makes me more humble in my claims about how digital audio is changing everything. 1930s teachers clearly worried that the radio was going to eclipse the printed book, but it didn't. At moments when media are relatively new, it can be tempting to overstate their impact on youth. We should be mindful of that.
And let's be mindful, too, of how audio media can be used to reinforce oppressive power structures. Collaborative audio production can be used for democratic ends, but only if we engage students in critically interrogating and resisting exclusionary corporate modes of media production.
And finally, if we are to sustain audio production pedagogies in the field, we need to be making audio media texts right alongside our students.
Exactly. That's why we composed this chapter as an audio essay.
And why we tried to compose a pedagogical history that was actually funny.
Something tells me that some of our English instructors from back in the day would not be particularly amused by our charming antics.
Touché. Okay, we gotta go, but we want to leave you with one more inspirational quote. This one from Mildred Carson.
The teacher of radio writing must be on her toes and leaning forward always.
It's a little too lean in for me, but yeah, I think she's right. Teaching audio production requires a lot of flexibility, a lot of improv, a lot of openness to letting the students teach you.
Well, that's about all we have for now. On behalf of Jason and myself, thanks for listening. And if you enjoyed this little history, be sure to check out the appendix section accompanying this audio essay, which includes sample assignment descriptions inspired by the audio-based pedagogies of the 1930s. This segment was produced with help from our ever-talented cast of voice actors, Chris Cheek, Katie Johnson, Jonathan Bradshaw, Catherine Tates, Katie Shea, Morgan Leckie, John Silvestro, and Ashley Miller. Sound effects were downloaded from freesound.org, a collaborative database of Creative Commons licensed sound effects and music, as well as the Open Source Audio Project, a part of the Internet Archive. The piece was recorded, edited, and mixed in GarageBand 10.1.0 in Columbus, Ohio.
We'll do it live!